This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. The opioid epidemic in Illinois has reached record highs in recent years.
Coast to coast and across Metro Chicago, our landscape is littered with all the proof you need. Overdoses are sky high and getting worse.
A coalition of Illinois prosecutors blames prescription drug makers for the opioid crisis.
Opioid overdoses are on the rise in Illinois, killing more than twice the number of people who die in car crashes and homicides.
Audio from TV news reports in Chicago and Rockford. The Illinois Department of Public Health counted more than 3,000 deaths from opioid overdoses in 2021, the most recent year for which there's complete data available. And that's just a fraction of the number of non-fatal overdoses that happened in Illinois that same year. One weapon in the ongoing fight against opioid deaths is naloxone. It's meant to be an antidote to opioid overdoses. One form of it you might have heard of is called Narcan. Given quickly enough and administered correctly, it can reverse overdoses. Pharmacists throughout the state can already provide naloxone without a prescription thanks to a standing public health order. And there have been other efforts to make it more widely available, including vending machines in some communities. First responders also often provide naloxone to treat overdoses. But last month, a panel of experts with the Federal Food and Drug Administration voted unanimously to make it over-the-counter nationwide. Worth noting, that's not a binding vote, and a final decision is expected by the end of this month. Making it more accessible could make a difference in dealing with the opioid epidemic. Joining us now to talk about what that decision could mean, how naloxone fits into the bigger picture of the opioid epidemic here in Illinois, is Dr. Kate Ostman. She is double board certified in addiction medicine and family medicine. She's with the Gibson Area Hospital and Health Services, which serves a number of communities in East Central Illinois. Dr. Ostman, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Also with us, Chris Dennis. He's an overdose prevention coordinator with the Egyptian Health Department in El Dorado in the southern part of the state. It's a public health department serving Saline, Gallatin, White, and Wayne counties, an area of the state known as Little Egypt, hence the name. Chris, welcome to you as well.
Thanks so much for having me.
We're also talking about this with Dr. Kurt Blumstrand, who's an emergency department physician with OSF Healthcare in Urbana. He's also EMS medical director for East Central Illinois EMS based in Champaign. Dr. Blumstrand, thank you for being with us as well.
Thanks so much for having me.
And as we'll talk about later on, police also play a role here, administering Narcan in emergency situations. I should say we did reach out to several police departments, including the Illinois State Police. They either did not respond to repeated requests to join us, or in the case of the state police, declined our request. We also asked the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police to take part in this, and they also declined our request. I also want to note before we begin, if you or someone you know is struggling with substance use, you can call the Illinois Helpline for Opioids and Other Substances. The number for that is 833-234-6343. That's 833-234-6343. There's also a text helpline. We'll put that in all that information on our website, 21stshow.org. So, Dr. Ostman, I want to begin with you, and I'd like to lay the foundation for what we'll be talking about as the conversation goes on. Very broadly speaking, what are opioids? How do they work on the body and the mind?
Yeah, so, opioids are a class of medications that attach to the opioid receptors, and they can be very useful in things like acute pain is what they're most commonly used for, and sometimes chronic pain as well. They come from the poppy plant is where they're originally hailed from. And so there's natural opioids, and then there's also synthetic opioids, and we've been hearing more about those, such as fentanyl.
Natural, coming from plants, synthetic being made in a lab. Dr. Blumstrand, what makes this class of drugs so addictive?
You know, so as she said, they treat pain, but as part of that, they also kind of release endorphins and create this sense of euphoria. And so that sense that these patients get by taking these medications over time might dwindle. And so they might continue to take larger amounts to get that same feeling of euphoria with taking them. And so that is somewhat of the addictive property of these medications.
And then, of course, we've been talking about overdoses. So what happens, Dr. Ostman, when there is an overdose? What is happening in the body? What might that look like?
So these medications can lead to depressed respiratory drive. And when you have too much of the medication in your body, that's what leads to the overdose. And what we're seeing is that people are encountering stronger doses than what they may have been used to using. And that is where some of these overdoses are occurring. But they can also occur when they're combined with other medications, such as benzodiazepines or alcohol, which also reduce that respiratory drive or that body's natural desire to breathe. And again, can lead to that, to death eventually.
Yeah. Yeah. So medicine basically telling your body to stop breathing. Medicine's not the right term, but a pharmaceutical. Chris, I want to ask you about another aspect to this epidemic, and I think we just heard it hinted to there. The Danville Police Department made a post on its Facebook page last week about fentanyl overdoses in particular. And it said, fentanyl is often added to other substances like counterfeit pills, heroin, cocaine, methamphetamine. As a result, many people may not know they are ingesting fentanyl, leading to an accidental overdose. Chris, Dennis, again, from the Egyptian Health Department, is that common from what you know? How does that playing a role in this epidemic?
Yeah, I feel like it's the presence of fentanyl and other things that people wouldn't typically assume contain fentanyl that's really driving a lot of the overdose numbers. Even in our area, we see a lot of counterfeit pills that actually just contain fentanyl. So that can be things like Xanax or Ativan or other things that look like safer opioids or what people perceive to be safer opioids. And they look just like a medication that you'd get from the pharmacist. And so people won't realize when they're taking those that they're so potent because they're being laced with fentanyl.
Why is there fentanyl suddenly appearing in these drugs that, I mean, that's not what people are going for? Dr. Osman, I don't know if you can weigh into that. Is this, you know, a sort of a cost-cutting move on the part of illicit drug manufacturers, or what's happening there?
Well, I think there's a lot of speculation about what's happening because it's hard to do a legitimate study on something that's
been in the
process happening. But we think that sometimes it's being added to it intentionally so that people maybe get in improved high, but a lot of times it may be unintentional. So that might be on the same table that they're sort of manufacturing both substances and it's getting into that. But there's probably several processes going on there. And I do want to just mention really briefly, had said something about accidental overdoses. And we review a lot of overdoses at the state level. And really, we think that all of them are accidental overdoses. There's very, very few times that people intentionally are trying to harm themselves by using these drugs.
Let me take a moment to reintroduce our conversation. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the opioid epidemic and specifically Narcan and other drugs like it, I think under the name Naloxone, that the FDA is considering making available over-the-counter nationwide. You can already get Naloxone without a prescription in Illinois thanks to a standing public health order. Some communities even put in vending machines. First responders provide these. We're talking about the role that is playing in the ongoing opioid epidemic with Dr. Kate Osman, who is with the Gibson Area Hospital and Health Services, specialist in addiction medicine. Also, Dr. Kurt Bloomstrand, who's an emergency department physician and EMS medical director for East Central Illinois EMS. And Chris Dennis, who's overdose prevention coordinator with the Egyptian Health Department in El Dorado in far southern Illinois. You're welcome to join our conversation today as well. How have you seen the opioid epidemic affecting your community or maybe even people in your family? 800-222-9455 is the number to join our conversation today. That's 800-222-9455. Would you carry Narcan around with you if it was available over the counter to sort of help someone who might be in need? Again, 800-222-9455. 5. So let's talk a little bit about Narcan. We talked briefly about, or before, about how opioids work. How does Narcan work? And Dr. Bloomstrand, let me ask you that. What is happening when somebody, what does it look like to actually treat someone with it? And then what's happening to them when they get this injection?
Right. So first step is recognizing that someone is in an opioid overdose situation. And so as Dr. Osman kind of alluded to, it's we're going to notice some decreased respiratory drive or no respiratory drive. They're all CNS depressants. And so step number one is recognizing that. Step number two is administering the Narcan or naloxone. And so what does it do? And so the opioid binds to the opioid receptors in the brain, but Narcan, once administered, has a stronger affinity to these receptors and kind of knocks off the opioid, so to speak, off those receptors and blocks it from binding to try to reverse the effects that that opioid had in that overdose situation to try to restore that patient's respiratory drive again. And so it's crucial that the sooner they get access to that Narcan, the better off that they will be. And so that's why essentially anybody that responds, any first responder, whether it be law enforcement, police, fire, EMS, anybody that's responding to an emergent situation by law is required to carry Narcan. And so that's been one of our jobs in our EMS office here locally, is training all of our first responder partners, not only in the ambulance, but also we have a large, what we term a Narcan assistant program here within our EMS office, to train many law enforcement officers to carry this since the law was enacted in 2015.
How are you finding the receptiveness to this? I mean, certainly EMS, it makes sense that they would carry it. Are police officers willing to do this? Are they eager to do it? Or has there been any pushback?
Honestly, they've been extremely willing and eager. We have close to 30 to 40 law enforcement agencies that we kind of oversee and assist and help train and provide Narcan for, and they've been extremely willing. Some law enforcement agencies actually carry Narcan on their duty belt. Some carry it in a bag in their vehicle. We hear stories about how multiple law enforcement officers, if they hear there's an overdose situation, they're very willing to help, and multiple law enforcement officers will stop what they're doing to try to go and help them. And so it's been a really rewarding process, and we've been seeing that the willingness to help in the law enforcement realm has been quite high.
Dr. Osman, I want to share throughout our conversation today some texts we got from listeners. We asked about this earlier this morning at our texting group. Emily in Savoy told us, "I support this change. The opioid epidemic affects more than just the people struggling. So many have kids. Those kids deserve to have their parents survive and have a second chance at recovery." We also heard from Terry in Springfield, who said, "I think we need to have the resources available so when someone survives an overdose, we can tackle the problem where it lies." Two ideas there. Let's maybe take them in turn, Dr. Osman. So first off, who do overdoses affect beyond just the person actually experiencing this medical condition? And how does that impact stretch beyond the people who overdose?
Yeah, I think, I mean, not just overdoses, but addiction in general can really affect the family members of the person, possibly coworkers that they are with every day. Also medical, the medical field, and finding those resources and being able to connect people with them. So it can affect quite a large number of persons.
And what about when you have somebody, and maybe Dr. Bloomstrom, and I can ask you about this, when you have somebody who comes in and, you know, has gotten this treatment in the emergency department, what happens next? Are people linked to longer term care or treatment if they want it after they get that sort of immediate care?
Right. Yeah, there's a couple of things that happen both in the ED, and we can also talk about in the ambulance realm as well, the pre-hospital field. So somebody who comes in with overdose, obviously we treat them, we get them back to where they need to be. And then what happens next is we try to get them linked up and give them resources for community resources to go for addiction recovery and treatment programs, right? Because we have to remember Narcan is a Band-Aid, right? It's reversing the opioid overdose, but it's not necessarily fixing the underlying problem, if you will. And so what we're doing is a Band-Aid. And so when we discharge those patients from the emergency department, we're trying to give them the resources and the tools that they need to continue that treatment pathway. And that's a long-term goal. And so we would give them resources. And, you know, Dr. Osman as an addiction recovery specialist would be one to, you know, talk a little bit about those resources, but we try to give them resources in the community, number one. Number two, what we also do is we try to get Narcan in as many hands as we can. And so in the emergency department, if somebody comes in after an overdose, we may prescribe them at discharge a course of Narcan in case this happens again. So they will have it with them at the residence, so family can help administer that, and we'll try to do some teaching. Another thing that happens now within our EDs at OSF, our healthcare record is programmed that if we prescribe an opioid to a patient, it automatically sends us a message that we should think about prescribing them Narcan as well. And so it's just another thing to kind of help spark that thought process in a physician or a provider's mind that maybe we need to look at Narcan. And then one last thing on the ambulance side of things, we really try to get Narcan out there. We have what's called a leave behind program, where if we one of our ambulances responds to a opioid overdose where Narcan was administered, we have a package that we can leave with the family or friends or people with that person. That includes a couple doses of Narcan and lots of information on how to administer it, what Narcan does, how to recognize an overdose. And so the goal is to try to get as much Narcan out there as possible. And so there's many different avenues that we utilize to do that.
All right, we need to take a break. We're going to continue this conversation when we come back. We're talking about Narcan and pegged to this news that the Federal Food and Drug Administration, a panel unanimously approved making it available over the counter. It still needs to get sort of full agency approval. That is pending, but it's already available. Pharmacists can give it out in Illinois thanks to a standing public health order. We're talking about that and the opioid epidemic more broadly with Dr. Kurt Blumstrand, who's an emergency department physician and medical director of the East Central Illinois EMS, Chris Dennis, who's overdose prevention coordinator with the Egyptian Health Department in far southern Illinois, and Dr. Kate Osman, who is a family and addiction medicine specialist with Gibson Area Hospital and Health Services. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation today. 800-222-9455. More to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we are talking for the rest of our program today about Narcan, which is an anti-overdose drug. It's available from pharmacists in Illinois, and it could soon be available over-the-counter nationally if the FDA takes the advice of a panel that voted to make it available that way. We're talking about this with Dr. Kate Osman, addiction medicine and family medicine specialist with Gibson Area Hospital and Health Services, Chris Dennis, overdose prevention coordinator with the Egyptian Health Department in El Dorado, which serves four counties in southern Illinois, and Dr. Kurt Blumstrand, who's an emergency department physician with OSF Healthcare in Urbana and an EMS medical director for East Central Illinois EMS. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation today. That's 800-222-9455. Before we go on, I want to bring some audio into our conversation. This is from body cam footage of a Los Angeles County deputy sheriff responding to two teens who had apparently overdosed on opioids.
Hey, Lopez, bring Narcan here. Here. Lopez, get in here.
16, 17.
Lopez. Get Narcan. Let them know we're doing. Let them know we're doing CPR.
Check for pulses. Check for pulses. First and Frank's conducting chest compressions.
He's karate. One on board.
He's checking.
Yeah, he's got pulse.
Dr. Blumstrand, so in addition to Narcan being mentioned, we also heard the deputy performing CPR. Can you take us through what does this actually look like in the moment? What are people trained to do in the moment as they're encountering a situation like this?
Yeah, absolutely right. And so when our providers or first responders get on scene, we're going to assess for The three basics that everybody learns in the first CPR class is airway, breathing, and circulation, right? And so depending on if we get to them in time, they may have a depressed respiratory drive and be breathing slower and or shallower, or they may not be breathing at all. And in that time, first and foremost, we need to help them breathe, right? And so we're going to be using our skills and our equipment to assist their respirations and breathing, and we're going to assess for a pulse. And first and foremost, if there's no pulse, we start CPR. That is the first thing that we will do. After that, we will hopefully have some other hands on board that can grab the Narcan to administer the Narcan. But we're in a situation where someone has overdosed to the point where their heart has stopped. First and foremost, we're looking for airway, breathing, circulation, and we're going to intervene on those life threats first and foremost.
Chris, you also do this sort of training, and anything to add to that?
A lot of people that we train to administer Narcan are just bystanders. So the first thing we always tell them is that it's important to get oxygen to those people's lungs. So we really train people on rescue breathing and the administration of Narcan. Sometimes we'll do a training with someone that just lasts a couple minutes. So we just really give them the basics, which is to make sure that you're blowing some air into their lungs through rescue breaths and administering Narcan.
Chris, how available is Narcan in the part of the state where you are? Can anyone who wants it get it? Do people even know they should be carrying it?
I'm not sure enough people know that they should be carrying it, but we'll train anyone to respond to an overdose, and we'll distribute Narcan to anyone for free. So as a drug overdose prevention program, that's part of our mission, really to get naloxone into every home. But there are a lot of other programs just like ours throughout the state of Illinois. We cover about 30 counties now for overdose prevention. So we do a lot of outreach, just trying to let people know the importance of carrying Narcan. We really try to find people who are still using illegal drugs, just to let them know that it's available, that their life matters to us, and there's something we can do to help them.
Dr. Osman, similar question to you. You're in the Gibson area. That's also a pretty rural area of the state. What's the big picture there in terms of access and availability and knowledge?
Yeah, so as Chris mentioned, we are also one of the drug overdose prevention sites. And so we are able to distribute Narcan to anyone who wants it. And we try to reach out to the community and to any groups that might be interested. I write a lot of prescriptions in the state of Illinois. Your insurance is required to cover some form of naloxone. It doesn't necessarily have to be Narcan, but most of them do cover Narcan. And as mentioned already, a lot of pharmacies participate in the program where you can just walk in without a prescription and buy that. Now, as a kind of a caveat to that, I have two daughters who are in college, and they both carry Narcan with them. To my knowledge, they're not around people who are using, but I tell them all the time, you could be, and you just don't know it. And so I've really encouraged that age group as well to carry it, because there's no harm in doing so, and you may save a life at some point.
That's interesting. Say more about that. I mean, do you envision this as being, because I was thinking about this in terms of like the EpiPen, right? A lot of people have been carrying EpiPens in case they have an allergic reaction to a bee sting or whatever it would be. But we don't generally, those of us who don't have that sort of severe anaphylactic reaction, don't generally carry EpiPens on behalf of others. Do you see this as becoming more common though with Narcan and that category of drugs?
Well, I really hope so, because you really can't hurt someone by giving them Narcan, even if they, you know, even if it's not an opioid overdose and you're not sure what it is, you really can't cause harm by this, and you may be able to help. So I do think it could be just common practice to that everybody's carrying it. I carry it in my backpack, and I have a lot of patients who come in and will tell me, I had a patient last week who said they saw somebody slumped in their car at the McDonald's parking lot and they used it there. Since they are in recovery, they recognize that more than someone else may have recognized it. But I think you can really, that this might be more common than we think, and really encouraging people to take these steps like carrying Narcan would be useful.
Dr. Bloomstrand, what about you? What sort of effect? We talked about this FDA panel making this recommendation for Narcan to be available over the counter in pharmacies in a community like Champaign-Urbana. What effect could that have there?
I mean, I think it'd be huge just for the points kind of already discussed by Chris and Dr. Osman, is the more opportunity for Narcan to be readily available, the better off it's going to be. You know, one of the things that we do right now in the EMS world is we're really promoting hands-only CPR and AED use throughout the community. One of the apps that we've implored within our EMS office is something called Pulse Point, which helps to implore bystanders to respond to somebody in need of CPR in a public place. But as part of that, that also maps all of the AEDs within our county. And then as part of that as well, we can also put in, if next to the AED, there's a stop the bleed kit, or even now Narcan or Epi, a lot of these AED boxes that you might see in public locations are starting to co-house, if you will, stop the bleed kits, Narcan kits, epinephrine pins. And so we can utilize this app called Pulse Point to really help promote and make aware of the different locations of Narcan. And so the more awareness we have of where Narcan may be in the public, and the more opportunity for the lay people to get their hands on Narcan, I think the better off it'll be.
We got a text from Christina in Rock Falls along these lines, said, I think it's a great idea. If I had anyone in my home who struggled with addiction that could potentially lead to an overdose, I would add some to my first aid kit. As I think about it, even though I am blessed to not have that worry, if available and affordable and it has a good shelf life, I would consider keeping some in my first aid kit in my home and vehicle just in case. I'd want to help someone who is overdosing every bit as much as someone who might be experiencing a medical event or injury. Chris, is that something in your department? Could somebody just come in and say, look, I don't think I'll ever need this, but maybe, you know, I just want to have some to put with my Band-Aids and Advil and so on in my bag. Could somebody do that?
Absolutely. We love for people to come in and ask for it. And actually, in the past year, we've put displays in all the lobbies of our locations so that anyone can walk in and pick up Narcan. There's a little card attached to it that tells them exactly what it looks like when someone's having an overdose. So we really want people to take it. It's sort of our in-between before we move to Narcan vending machines, is to just make it easily accessible. Sometimes, because of the stigma, I think, people are hesitant to come in and say that they need it or want it. And so putting it in a place, a location that they can access without having to talk to anyone, makes it way more likely that they'll leave with it.
I want to go to the phones now at 800-222-9455. Nancy is calling from... Hello, there you are. Hello, Nancy. Thank you for calling in.
Good afternoon. I wanted to speak to the issue of the opioid epidemic.
Yes, please go ahead. You're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
I studied it in my law enforcement classes, and I really think it's gone above and beyond, which is horrible. With the overdoses in this country is absolutely absurd and awful, and it's very sad.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for calling in, Nancy. I appreciate that comment. Dr. Osman, what are some of the other resources? Because Narcan is just one tool in the tool bag, so to speak. You know, we heard from Christopher in Brimfield, who said the opioid crisis in America and the world is a medical disease problem, not a social ill. We should treat this as a medical problem and give all the tools necessary to fight it. Dr. Osman, do you see the broader health and criminal justice system in America reorienting itself in that way? How do you see that?
Well, I really hope that we start doing that, because we have considered addiction of all forms a criminal justice problem for many, many years. And we are really recognizing more and more that it's a medical problem. And we consider these now chronic medical diseases and something that should be cared for in the medical community. And I think there's a lot of reasons why it hasn't been, but we're starting to turn that corner, and we're really starting to make it more accessible, and people, providers, I feel, are starting to become more comfortable with talking to patients about addiction, because we do have better tools now to treat that. For opioids, we have medication that works. We also talk about, you know, like in my office, we have counselors and therapists that will work with patients. We have something called a peer recovery support person who can walk with the patient and really help to connect them to other needs that they may have. So I think we're starting to normalize this conversation around addiction, and that's really exciting for us.
Last question, I think, Dr. Bloomstrand, if somebody's listening to this and they are dealing with an addiction themselves, or maybe they know someone who's dealing with it, what advice would you give them?
Reach out for help, right? Talk to somebody that you're comfortable talking with, right? Talk to your primary care provider. But the first step is reaching out for help. And that's really the first step in the whole process of recovery.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Bloomstrand and Dr. Osman and Chris Dennis from the Egyptian Health Department, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st show to talk about this important issue.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
And I want to mention again, reach out for help. If you or someone you know is struggling with substance use, you can call the Illinois Helpline for Opioids and Other Substances. The number again is 833-234-6343. That's 833-234-6343. There's also an option to text. You can text the word HELP, H-E-L-P, to 833-234. That's text the word HELP to 833-234. 2, 3, 4. Coming up on tomorrow's program, we're going to be continuing our series looking at the newest national parks in Illinois. We'll be looking at the Pullman National Park, which is in the south side of Chicago. It was, of course, a site famous for the Pullman Porters and the Pullman rail cars. It's one of America's newest national parks. We'll be talking about that tomorrow on the program. We'll also be listening back as we have learned that former President Jimmy Carter is receiving hospice care. We'll be listening back to our conversation with one of his biographers from a few years ago on the program. And that's all the time we have for today. You can stay up to date with us on our website, 21stshow.org. You can let us know what you thought about our programs by sending us an email or leaving us a voicemail. All the ways to contact us, again, on our website, 21stshow.org. You can also subscribe to our podcast from there, or just find us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Search for The 21st Show. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda. Our interns are Owen Henderson and Anaya Jones. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.